Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome tonight to the Light of Truth radio broadcast with Michael Boldea.
All right, and I guess that's what they call a cold open. No music, no spiffy one-liners, just us. It's good to be back. We missed the Thanksgiving Day program, and I think rightfully so, because who would have listened on Thanksgiving? That aside, I do hope that you had a pleasant and productive Thanksgiving. I pray that you took the time to assess all the things that you have in your life that you ought to be thankful for, because that's what I did. That's what me and the family did. We didn't cook a turkey because there wouldn't have been enough people to eat it. So we just cooked some fish, and myself, my wife, and Victoria, the four-year-old, we went around the table telling what we were thankful for. And once you start to put it together, once you start to make a list, once you start to outline the small and great things alike, you come to the realization that you have a lot to be thankful for. Even in this world that seems to be growing more and more grotesque with each passing day, even in this world where darkness threatens to stifle light at every turn, we still have a lot to be thankful for. Because you can be thankful for the things that God has given you. You can be thankful for the blessings that God has bestowed upon you and still fight the good fight and still do your utmost to defend the truth. And still do your utmost to stand for the light. The two are not mutually exclusive. Because I had a conversation with a friend recently, and he's all, well, you know, if you were thankful for so much, then why do you say the world's so bad? Well, again, because the two aren't mutually exclusive. I can be very thankful for all the things that God has given myself and my family, for our health and our blessing and each other. And at the same time, even simultaneously, look at the world around me and conclude that it has grown worse, that it is growing worse, that with each passing day, something new, more disturbing than the last, pops up, and you're left to wonder, or at least wonder, how much worse it can get. What's the next shoe that's going to drop? And it's a difficult position that we're in, because I've thought about this a lot. You can't help someone that doesn't want to help themselves. That's the best way I can put it. If you have a generation and a society that's hell-bent on its own suicidal destruction, there really isn't much that you or I can do. I can't save you from you. I can show you a different path. I can tell you the truth as I know it to be. I can highlight the things that I see as destructive forces, even within the church. But what I cannot do as an individual is save a person from themselves. And I think that this is the conundrum that we find ourselves in. We look at people almost gleefully scotching to their own destruction. We look at people almost gleefully sprinting towards the precipice. And you do your best to cry out. You do your best to point to the nothingness that's ahead of them, to the precipice, the giant hole in the ground. Scream at them at the top of your lungs. Hey, slow down, turn around. You're about to leap into nothingness. And rather than pay any mind, rather than heed, rather than listen, the only visible reaction that they actually heard what you said is that they speed their pace. We're living in a moment in time where all the alarm bells are going off. And yet the only thing that people are doing is increasing the pace at which they're advancing towards destruction. I know it doesn't seem like a happy message now, you know, given that we're in the holiday season, but it is nevertheless a necessary one. Because we're very short-sighted as a species. And I'm talking about Christian and un-Christian alike. I'm talking about saved and unsaved alike. As long as we have what we want in the moment, as long as things seem good in the moment, we pay no mind to the fact that certain pieces are being put into place wherein inevitable hardship is on the horizon. I'm trying to put this as gently as possible, and I think that's a good way of putting it. Inevitable hardship is on the horizon. It doesn't matter what area you're looking at. The warning signs are there. Even with record unemployment and increased wages, people are still outspending themselves. If they earn a dollar, they'll spend two. If they earn $2, they'll spend five. And every report that I'm seeing says that household debt has ballooned over the last year and a half. Even though wages have increased, even though there's a surplus of jobs, even though anyone that wants to work can work. Because we're seeing an entire generation that has a singular pursuit. And that singular pursuit is to keep up with the Joneses. It doesn't matter that they're getting themselves into debt that they cannot pay. It doesn't matter that they're buying things they don't need. The only thing that matters is that for the moment, for an instant, for a blink of an eye, they can show off a shiny new phone that they overpaid for. Because it has an Apple logo on it or something. Now, if we pull back a little bit and we look at the global situation, it's not any rosier and it's not any better. We're seeing the war of words between Iran and the U.S. escalating. And the most recent thing that jumped out at me as I was scanning the news was the fact that Russia saw fit to attack some Ukrainian ships and even take them hostage, basically. Now, the Ukrainians have already declared martial law. And Donald Trump has chosen to cancel his meeting with Putin over this attack on the Ukrainian ships. Now, those of you that have been listening to the program for some time know that I've told you the Russians will bid their time. They will be patient. They will wait in the weeds until they feel as though it is an opportune moment for them to flex their muscle. They will bite their tongue and come to heel as much as they can until they see an opportunity to take advantage of the global chaos, to take advantage of the uncertainty covering the world like a blanket, and commence with making moves. Now, I think they've seen their opportune moment. It's interesting to me that they waited to have a skirmish with the Ukrainians until after the midterm elections of the U.S. I think seeing that the Democrats took the House has emboldened the Russians, because they know that much of the time of this administration will be spent for the next 2 years at least trying to fend off the mosquitoes and the barrage of idiocy that will be leveled at them. I think Russia has also taken into account the fact that there is friction within the European Union. British is exiting, as we all know. Apparently, they're willing to pay large sums of money in order to be granted this divorce. Germany has been overtaken by a slow invasion that we're trying to prevent on our shores. There is no European nation at this juncture, right now, as we talk, as we sit, on November the 29th, 2018, there is no European nation that can stand up to the Russians. That's a fact. I don't care how you slice it. I don't care how you dice it. There is no European nation at this juncture, at this time, stand up to the Russians, effectively at least. The Italians are bogged down by the same problems the Germans are. The French are burning down their own country because Macron decided it was within the French people's best interest to raise their gas tax so they start buying electric cars or riding the bus or walking more or getting those fruity bikes with the basket on the front and putting a baguette in the basket. So the people were so incensed at what Monsieur Macron attempted to do, which is tax them more, of course, that they started burning things. The French are rioting. So we'll see how that plays out. But they did elect him. See, this is the problem with falling for people that are just a little bit too polished and a little bit too shiny, and a little bit, how should we say, too perfect. You vote for them hoping that it's not a facade, It is the same thing that America did with Barack Hussein Obama. And even though the bloom was off the rose after the first 4 years, they still voted him in for a second term. So I'm not one to have much empathy for the people of France and for their issues with the taxes on their gasoline, because they did it themselves. When you vote people into power, you give them authority over the way that the nation works, goes, the direction which in which it flows. And apparently, the French people decided that Macron was the best choice to lead France into the future. And here is the future of France getting taxed bloody in order to compel people to no longer drive gasoline-powered cars. And if you are looking at France today and going, oh, these foolish French, believe me, it's coming here too. Because I have been looking disgustedly at the crop of new recruits that have joined the House and Senate. And believe you me, these are not mild-mannered, even-tempered folk. These are zealots by any stretch of the imagination. By any metric, these individuals are zealots, and they will attempt to legislate you into subjugation. And I will have as much empathy for you as I do for the people of France. Because elections have consequences. And if you couldn't be bothered to get out and cast a vote, well, here you go. You let 49% of the population decide on who is going to lead you. And the direction in which they're pointing is not bright or cheery. It still boggles the mind how many people insist that socialism is a utopia, when everywhere that it's been tried, it led to misery and death. But this is what happens when people are indoctrinated. It's not just being propagandized. You have a very large swath of this nation that is indoctrinated exactly in the same manner a Muslim zealot is indoctrinated to the point of going out and trying to kill an infidel. These people are indoctrinated into believing that socialism is the grand experiment of our time. It is the utopia for which we yearn. And nothing you can say and no facts you can point to will dissuade these people from continue to press for this system of governance that is a failure on its face. And the more disjointed and the more discombobulated and the more divided America is, the more of a license the Russians will see to press their advantage, to do their utmost in achieving their desired goal. We've discussed this in the past, but it warrants repeating. Vladimir Putin has made it very clear that his ultimate desire and goal, Russia, as glorious as it once was when it was known as the USSR. It's as simple as that. And so if you think that you can make that kind of omelet without breaking a few dozen eggs, you're out of your mind. And again, is no European country that at this juncture, at this point, has either the resources, the wherewithal, or even the backbone to stand up to the Russians. Understand this. If the Russians decide to march on Europe, the only thing that the Europeans will do is show the whites of their bellies. They will surrender day one. And you know what? Chances are better than good that they're going to try to appeal to the Americans again. Oh, monsieur, come save us. But yeah, I'm sorry. We did that once already. We can't save you from yourself. So I think that we're at a very interesting crossroads. I'll say interesting. It's decisive is what it is. Because if the Russians continue to press this, if the Russians continue to push, if they continue to show aggressions towards the Ukrainians and see that they can get away with it, I do believe it's only a matter of time before they start to march on Europe. And I think they're seeing how divided America is. They're seeing that everything now has become politicized. Everything has become political. It doesn't matter if it's good for the nation. It doesn't matter if it's good for the world. As long as it's not good for Trump, as long as he's for it, we're against it. And it just boggles the mind how hatred can blind people to such an extent wherein they would work against their own self-interest. It seems that on her way to the G20, Madame Merkel had to make an emergency landing in Germany because there was something wrong with her plane. I think she just didn't want to go. There's very few politicians have the honor of mucking it up as thoroughly as Madame Merkel has. And I think if there's one bright spot over the last few weeks, it's the fact that this administration has learned from Germany's mistakes and has chosen to draw a line in the sand as far as what the media calls the migrant caravan is concerned. Because these people were foaming and frothing at the mouth about having to let them in, let them in, let them in. How many? Doesn't matter. Let them in. Is there a number you have in mind? Nope. Let them in. 10,000, 100,000, 5 million, 15 million? Doesn't matter. Let them in. But why? It's illegal. It doesn't matter. Let them in. And through this all, because this was a well-coordinated just barrage. It was such a constant attack. I stopped watching the news for 2 whole weeks. I couldn't stomach it anymore. Everything from pictures of women and children to if they could somehow get someone to shed blood live on camera, it would have made their day. And still, this administration had the wherewithal to say no. You can't force your way into a sovereign country. You have to apply like everybody else. Because if they would have let these 1,000, 15,000, how many they are in, guess what would be happening next week? Another 20,000 would have shown up. And the week after, another 15, 20, 50, 30, 40. Because it's never ending. It will never stop. And, you know, I don't want to point out the obvious, because I think the obvious has been pointed out once or twice before. But when you saw pictures of this so-called caravan, it seemed kind of odd that most of them were young men of fighting age carrying their own nation's flags. These are people who weren't waving the American flag. They were burning it. Now, pray tell, as an aside, if you despise a nation so much that you would take its flag and burn it for the world to see, why would you be so bent on coming to said nation? If you have such love for Nicaragua in your heart that you're carrying its flag, por qué did you not stay in Nicaragua? These are very important questions that Jorge Ramos and the other blowhards at CNN and MSNBC seem not to want to ask. If you have such an affinity for Guatemala, if you have such an affinity for Mexico, if you have such an affinity for Venezuela and Nicaragua, why did you not stay there? Why are you trekking and marching to the borders of America if it's so hateful? If you despise it to such an extent that you're burning its flag, why would you want to come to this country? Now, these people were interviewed time and again, and most of them were honest. They were coming, surprise, for the economic benefits. They were coming to work. On the way here, they were taught how to, you know, work the system, as the kids like to say. And I've seen some Facebook memes that say, if you know what you're doing as an illegal, you can get up to $3,800 a month from the generous taxpayer of the United States of America. So there's no reason for these people not to want to come here. But see, there's a difference between an immigrant who applies to come to this nation in the hope of being welcomed, assimilating and integrating themselves, and becoming American. And those who are marching on America's borders, all the while burning its flag. If you can't see that difference, maybe you should take another look. Because there is a marked difference between those who come here legally, hoping to assimilate and make a better life for themselves and their children, and those who bum rush a border or sneak in, working for cash and sending all the money back to Guatemala and Nicaragua. There is. See, I'm all for legal immigration. I'm a legal immigrant. I came here when I was 9 years old. I didn't know why I was here. My mom and my dad and my two little brothers and my grandpa and grandma, we all landed in Los Angeles, California. We never once harbored any hatred for this country in our heart. I never once considered burning an American flag. Neither did my parents, neither did my grandparents. This nation welcomed us when our own nation kicked us out. And because it was so welcoming, my entire family has a deep love and fondness for this nation. Why do you think we keep doing what we're doing? Why do you think we keep preaching repentance, hoping that repentance would be forthcoming? Because a lot of people have taken to saying, well, the message is judgment. You must really hate America. No, God hates sin. And God holds accountable those to whom much has been given. I don't hate America. I love America. This is why I'm doing my utmost to try to wake up the church and compel it to repentance. So, yes, as an immigrant, I don't understand the mindset we're in. I'm trekking for 1,000 miles towards a nation whose flag I'm burning, hoping to force myself in. It just doesn't make sense. And meanwhile, having every reason to be thankful for, having a plethora of reasons to be thankful for. The news of the day is that suicides are at a 50-year peak and overdoses have reached a record high. Can you imagine that? Overdoses and suicides are peaking. It wasn't happening during the Great Depression. It wasn't happening during the 07 meltdown. It's happening now. When, by every metric, the economy is booming. This is from the AP, and it says, suicides and drug overdoses pushed up U.S. deaths last year and drove a continuing decline in how long Americans are expected to live. I'm going to read this and then point out the obvious. This is the fruit of godlessness. When you have no God, you have no peace. When you have no peace, you resort to things that dull you, that numb you. And this is just talking about drug overdoses. I don't know if it's legal or illegal drugs, but I run across enough people to tell you that it frightens me how many even believers are on some prescription drug that alters their mood. Because apparently nobody wants to feel anymore. And when you're constant, when your baseline is numbness, when you're apathetic about everything and nothing gives you joy because you're self-medicating, trying to avoid pain, then the end result is suicide being at a 50-year peak. Look, God created man in such a wondrous way wherein we are meant to experience both joy and pain. We're meant to experience both excitement and trepidation. We're supposed to see bursts of color in black and white. But when everything day in and day out is just a dull gray, I couldn't imagine that either. Get into this. Suicides and drug overdoses pushed up U.S. deaths last year and drove a continuing decline in how long Americans are expected to live. Overall, there were more than 2.8 million U.S. deaths in 2017, or nearly 70,000 more than the previous year, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said Thursday. It was the most deaths in a single year since the government began counting more than a century ago. The increase partially reflects the nation's growing and aging population, but it's deaths in younger age groups, particularly middle-aged people, that have had the largest impact on calculations of life expectancy, experts say. These sobering statistics are a wake-up call that we are losing too many Americans too early and too often to conditions that are preventable. Dr. Robert Redfield of the CDC, actually the CDC's director, said in a statement, "The suicide death rate last year was the highest it's been in at least 50 years, according to U.S. government records. There were more than 47,000 suicides last year, up from a little under 45,000 the year before. So 47,000 people last year. Didn't think a sunrise wondrous enough to want to see one more. 47,000 people last year, just in America, were so void of any hope, were so void of any joy, were so void purpose, that they would rather end it all. And this is what godlessness begets us. And this is what hedonism begets us. For decades, U.S. life expectancy was on the upswing, rising a few months nearly every year. Now it's trending the other way. It fell in 2015, stayed level in 2016, and declined again last year, the CDC said. The nation is in the longest period of a generally declining life expectancy since the late 1910s, when World War I and the worst flu pandemic in modern history combined to kill nearly 1 million Americans. Life expectancy in 1918 was 39. Let that sink in. Life expectancy in 1918 was 39. Aside from that, we've never really seen anything like this, said Robert Anderson, who oversees CDC death statistics. In the nation's 10 leading causes of death, only the cancer death rate fell in 2017. Meanwhile, there were increases in seven others: suicide, stroke, diabetes, Alzheimer's, flu and pneumonia, chronic lower respiratory diseases, and unintentional injuries. An underlying factor is that the death rate for heart disease, the nation's number one killer, has stopped falling. In years past, declines in heart disease deaths were enough to offset increases in some other kind of deaths, but no longer, Anderson said. So what is driving it? Well, CDC officials did not speculate about what's behind declining life expectancy. But Dr. William Dietz, a disease prevention expert at George Washington University, sees a sense of hopelessness. Let that sink in. Financial struggles, a widening income gap, and divisive politics are all casting a pall over many Americans, he suggested. I really do believe that people are increasingly hopeless, and that leads to drug use. It leads potentially to suicide, he said. What is the root cause of hopelessness, doctor? It's not politics. It can't be the economy. It can't be joblessness. You see, but even someone with a doctorate is unwilling to concede a point. He's unwilling to look at the foundation of everything. And that is when God is absent from society. When God is absent from the individual, that is the perfect breeding ground for hopelessness. If God is present in a life, though one might struggle, though one might have difficulties, though one might have hard times, though one might have setbacks, they still have God. And God gives them peace, and God gives them joy. And God gives them hope. So if the pandemic is hopelessness, the cause of the pandemic is godlessness. But see, this is something that no academic will ever agree with. This is a point that no academic will ever concede. Because in order for them to concede the fact that it is godlessness causing hopelessness, they would have to concede that these Christians that they looked down on, these Christians that they mocked, these Christians that they ridiculed for long and long, were right. They knew something after all. Their hope wasn't false. Their joy wasn't false. Their peace wasn't fabricated. Living in an alternate universe, they had true peace. They had true joy that surpassed human understanding. They had true hope. And so because man will not concede the fact that it is godlessness causing the epidemic of hopelessness, next year, if we're all still about, we will read a similar article with a similar tone. We will read that once again there was a leap in the suicide rate. And once again, doctors and academics will point to hopelessness and say, this is the cause of it. Yes, but what causes the hopelessness? What is the root cause? Absence of God. See, they did not believe that there would be consequences to taking God out of the schools. They did not believe that there would be consequences for taking prayer out of the schools. They did not believe that there would be consequences to stifling Christian speech. They did not believe there would be consequences to mocking Christ. They did not believe there would be consequences to looking down on those who followed after the book. They did not believe that there would be consequences to thinking themselves newly minted gods. These are the consequences of the aforementioned actions. Absence of God leads to hopelessness. And when a man has no hope, he has nothing left to live for. And more people experiencing this hopelessness. And they're trying to medicate themselves out of it. They're trying to drink themselves out of it. They're trying to drug themselves out of it. And still, it is present. It is there, perhaps numbed for a minute, perhaps numbed for a while, but it's still there. And once you sober up, or once you run out of pills, that hopelessness crashes on you again. We need the children of God to step up and present the remedy to hopelessness. And that is Christ. We need the children of God to step up and fearlessly proclaim that there is no other way to peace. There is no other way to joy. There is no other way to hope than through Christ. For the life of me, I still do not understand why we are so hesitant, why we are so fearful of presenting people with hope. Because judging by these statistics, there's a high demand and a short supply. Everyone's looking for hope somewhere. Either the bottom of a bottle or the bottom of a pill box or the tip of a needle. They're looking for hope. And God has hope to give. Not a fleeting hope. Not a momentary high that diminishes with time, but true hope. Hope that lasts. Hope that subsists. Hope that endures. Hope that is unshakable. Think of it this way. Imagine suddenly there was a pandemic worldwide. Mortality rate 100%. And there was a group of people possessed the antidote to this pandemic. It cost them nothing to produce. And yet, rather than shout it from the rooftops that they have the antidote, that they have a way wherein people can stay alive, they slink in the corners, fearful of opening their mouths, watching people to the left and the right of them perish. It may be a bit over-dramatized, but this is what is happening. The church has the antidote to hopelessness. But we're too timid and fearful to tell those who are dying of it that, hey, here it is. Taste and see that the Lord is good. We have the antidote to the hopelessness that is causing a 50-year peak in suicides. We have the antidote to the hopelessness that is causing people of all ages and races and even economic strata to overdose on drugs. And yet, what are we doing with it? I know that this hits home to some of you. But it's the reality that we're living. I wanted to talk about this particular article and put it in this frame, in this context. So that we would understand when we speak about the sin of omission. Being held accountable for what we could have done but did not do. It's within this context. You possess the antidote to hopelessness. Hopelessness is solely responsible for the highest suicide rate in 50 years in this country. Why wouldn't you want to do everything in your power to make sure that you told everyone that you could that there is a remedy? That there is a way for them to be freed, that there is a way for them to have peace, that there is a way for them to have hope. That there is a way for them to be complete. That there is a way for them to see the world in color. To be in awe of a sunrise, to be in awe of a sunset, to smile with their heart at seeing their one-year-old baby trying to make sense of snowfall for the first time. God offers hope. God is hope. Give God to those who are perishing. Give God to those who are hopeless. And though 1 out of 10 will listen to your words, you manage to save a life. And any time you manage to save a life, it's a good day. Thank you for joining us. Lord willing, we will be back with you again next week. But yeah, this was on my heart, and I needed to share with you. So there you go. Make of it what you will. God bless you. God keep you. Gino, it's all yours.
Hey, thank you, Mike. And I do totally agree. People need hope. Consider strongly in your area where you live. You know, to be a light, pray for those people that are struggling. In the last year, I know personally I've dealt with 4 or 5 people that were suicidal. And thankfully through prayer, actually going right to their home in some situations, God stopped all of them from committing suicide. And now some of them are getting help with their alcohol problem. And thankfully, God was able to give the wisdom to work with the people to see them want to live. We got to go where the hurting are, the broken, the lost, and not shun them, but try to reach them. And you can see the ministry of the Lord was all about bringing healing and hope and encouragement to people. He is and was the light of the world. And on so many levels, in my area where Hand to Help has their office, we've been able to, on a local level, many of us work with many of the people that have been struggling with drugs and alcohol. God has done a great work through our Meal of Hope that we do monthly, helping the poor, and through many other means of helping the homeless, through our church and through other avenues. We've seen God touch a lot of lives, and many of them are now Christians as well. I don't think the lost are just going to knock the door of the church down to come in. I think you have to go out to the highways and byways and reach them with the gospel. I think about Dave Wilkerson with Teen Challenge and other ministries, Salvation Army. These were people that went to the worst parts of town and brought the hope of Jesus. And God blessed their efforts incredibly, where these ministries now reach millions around the country to help people get off drugs and alcohol. So with that, God be with you. Thank you for listening tonight. We will put the show up on YouTube tomorrow. And may God strengthen you.